Welcome to Roguecast, the official podcast of Rogues Gallery on Round Rock, where we talk about games, comics, and other stuff on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
I'm Nick.
This is Dave.
And let's go to the show for this week. This is the Roguecast for Wednesday, January 7th, 2015. First podcast of 2015, gentlemen.
That's so awesome, and I have a cold.
Yeah.
I won't have my usual dulcet tones for this podcast. I'll have make you want to strangle the podcaster voice.
Okay, good to know.
I just wanted to let people know right up front.
So,
it's kind of gravelly and cool though, right?
Right off the bat, 2015 is a little rough. You got a cold. One of my Christmas presents broke this morning.
Yep.
Nick threw out his back.
I actually threw out my back destroying Christmas because I was getting rid of my Christmas tree. I tweaked it.
That is your inner Grinch.
It's possible.
I don't know if taking down Christmas trees is necessarily destroying Christmas, but you know, we'll go.
It is if it's someone else's.
According to my wife, I destroyed Christmas. I'm taking all of it down. She was sad.
And then, of course, the comics are coming in a little late for us, which won't affect you guys. You'll still get them on Wednesday. It's just that we'll be scrambling around like chickens with our heads cut off trying to get things done Wednesday morning.
If you do come in Wednesday morning and we're scrambling around with like chickens with their heads cut off, show mercy on us.
Yes.
We'll be in a frenzied and terrified state.
So usually, and I think we've mentioned this before, but usually we get our comics on Tuesday during the day.
Right.
We pull on a nice luxurious Tuesday morning afternoon.
Yeah.
Get everything pulled, put aside, cover up the wall because we're not allowed to sell anything till Wednesday.
Right, but we get our subscribers
pulled. But everything's set. Yeah, all the subscribers are pulled. Everything's done. Signs are done. We open the door on Wednesday. Boom. Done. This is a throwback. Every so often, something will happen. The weather delay, which is what they're saying this time, holidays, something will happen with the shipping, and stuff takes an extra day to get to us. And that day means that we get things 9 a.m. at the earliest. We can sneak in at 8:30 on UPS, get the books, drive like maniacs to get back to the store, and pull for the 35, 40 minutes before we open.
Right. And the idea is to try and we have to count the hundreds of comics that we get.
Yep.
Make sure that we get them all, that we've gotten everything we're supposed to.
Yep.
Put them all up on the wall alphabetically and pull them for our hundreds of awesome subscribers.
Yes.
We usually don't get it quite done by 10.
No. And we're trying to cram everything into 20, 30 minutes that we usually do over 3 or 4 hours.
Yeah.
Right.
So it's a bit manic. We hate these kind of weeks. But like I say, should be invisible to you guys, except that we don't have any comics to talk about on the podcast today.
But there will be awesome comics.
There will be awesome comics this week.
We're covering the other side of the story.
Yeah, we're going to talk best of games, which we're planning to do anyway. So we're just going to kind of expand that a little bit. But real quick, I know that we're looking forward to Ant-Man number one and Operation Sin number one, which is the Peggy Carter thing.
There's a Death of Wolverine hardcover.
What's the Peggy Carter thing? I actually don't know about this.
It's set in the 50s. It's called Operation Sin. I believe it's going to be sort of a throwback to original Sin, where it's going to be a reveal of something that happened back in the day.
It's a miniseries then?
Yeah, it's a miniseries. Okay. I don't remember the writers or the artists. I don't have the comic in front of me, of course. So, but it is going to be a tie-in to the Agent Carter TV show, which is starting tonight as we record this.
Yes.
As you listen to this, you've probably watched it already.
I would assume so.
Was it great? Tell if it was great. Was it great? Oh, this is a one-way thing. I forget that. Yeah.
They can't talk through.
You know, am I correct that the actress who plays Peggy Carter,
Haley Atwell,
was on
she was on the
Black
awesome
Mirror?
She was. One of my favorite episodes of Black Mirror.
Yeah. And we've talked about Black Mirror, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Y'all go see it. It's on Netflix now.
Yeah.
Be sure you've taken your antidepressants and then check it out.
Yeah, but I'm looking forward to seeing Haley Atwell again as Peggy Carter.
Yep.
And that's tonight, and I'm excited about this 8-part miniseries.
Oh yeah, no, it's great.
By the way, the Peggy Carter thing, we've seen a little bit with her because they threw it on the Iron Man.
There was a Marvel one shot Peggy Carter,
extra features or whatever that they did, and that was a cool little short.
Yes, it was, and that's what gives me a lot of hope is that I feel like they know what they need to do.
Yeah. Good actress,
Have they said they're getting, what's his name for Dum-Dum? Is he showing back up?
I think they've said that Dum-Dum will be in it. I know that Howard Stark is in it.
Yeah.
I also know one other thing that might be considered a spoiler, but I won't say. So there's another old school Marvel character who I'm so thrilled to be seeing.
Ooh.
So, so that's going to be going on tonight. Quick housekeeping stuff, as always. We are going to have our ladies' night next Monday. As mentioned, Homefield Grill is shut down. So this one is going to be held at the Barnes & Noble in the La Frontera Shopping Center.
Yep.
That's going to be on January 12th. All the info is on our website and on our Facebook page. The next night, that Tuesday, is Transmetropolitan Reading with Rogues. We still have time to pick up Transmit Volume 1 from us. We're going to do that at Fuddruckers just up the road from us, January 13th. And then that Wednesday, January 14th, will be the release of Star Wars number 1.
Oh, right. It's our...
So, yeah, we'll have...
Do we have cool giveaway things?
We'll have some lithographs, Scotty Young lithographs.
Oh, cool. And
There'll be a ton of variant covers. And, you know, we talked about possibly if we can manage it to maybe have some X-Wing TIE Fighter board game available set for people to play. So we'll see.
Cool.
Also, we just wanted to mention... we've discovered that... If you give us good reviews, if you're listening to us through iTunes or Stitcher Radio, if you give us a good review, specifically like a 5-star review, it bumps us up on the lists of stuff where people might see us. You might get more people listening to us. That would be much appreciated. So if you're liking the show, go and write us a 5-star review on iTunes or Stitcher Audio, and we would very much appreciate it.
I don't like us that much. I mean, we're okay.
That's just your cold talking.
Oh, right, right. That's
also, we wanted to mention that we have started using our long-neglected Twitter account.
Yes.
We're going to try and use it. Our new staffer, Amanda, is running it, and she has an awesome question up for the first day, which was a...
It was something that I think idly came up in conversation with mm-hmm. she and, like, her boyfriend, or maybe it was on Facebook.
Yeah.
But the question is...
If the Ghostbusters of 1984 had a rival organization, the Ghost Smashers, also cast from 1984 movie actors, who would those four Ghost Smashers be?
Yeah.
And there's no one responded much on our Twitter, but there was a lot of response back on Facebook on hers, and it's a fun idea, so go respond.
Throw in the John Candys, the Eddie Murphys.
Yep.
We were talking earlier, and
I went completely British.
British, yep.
Yeah, he had like a... You know, the 80s had that tradition of sort of the snobs versus the slobs
sure,
in the movie.
Yep.
And the slobs always got to win and show those hoity-toity guys.
Yep, yep.
And the British people would be the perfect snobbish Ghostbusters.
Yep. Sure. I believe Tim Curry is one of those belong on the snobs team.
Maybe. Yeah, oh, yeah, absolutely. I put, John Cleese.
John Cleese, yeah. Michael Caine.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But envision your rival Ghostbusters, your Ghost Smashers, and throw in on our Twitter feed.
Yep, and our Twitter feed is at Rogues Gallery. And then we were going to talk real quick about the stuff we've been doing the new year, which mostly for us have been video games.
Yes.
We may talk about that later, depending on how long our topic runs.
Right.
But we're all doing challenges.
Oh, God, yeah, we are.
So there's a book challenge.
Right, yeah, I don't know. I guess it's sort of just the new year and people kind of felt like, hey, let's consume more media and stuff. So the book challenges is the first one.
Yeah, the book challenges is there's a list that our staffer Tila found that is 50 books.
It's 50 parameters.
Well, 50 parameters. It's meant to be 50 books.
It's not.
It is.
It's not.
We're doing it differently, but that's how they meant it.
That's not. They never say 50 books. Anyway, the point is, it's things like a book with over 500 pages, a book by an author you've never read before. They're little challenges, a mystery book, etc. And, you know, the idea is to, no matter what, to, you know, tick off as many of the challenges as you can to inspire you to try maybe some new stuff that you hadn't read otherwise.
I think this challenge for me is just inspiring me to read more because I do read a lot of graphic novels.
Yep.
Which will feed into another challenge.
Yep.
But I've come to realize I don't read a lot of novels anymore, and that wasn't always the case. I used to devour books.
Yeah.
And, I'm trying to get back to that. So.
Well, it's always a little more easier to fall into stuff that's a little bit more passive, like TV or movies, or active in kind of a more immediate way, like video games.
Yeah.
I think everybody's somewhat guilty of that. It's just easy to do.
Not everybody. Some people. Tila only reads books.
That's true.
Like,
that's
Tila's... True. This is the thing about being the reading challenge if you're a competitive person. Yeah. And I'm not, really, which is good, because Tila is going to smash all of us. She reads, like, a book a day. Like my daughter. It's crazy.
Yeah. She's mostly just skimming them.
Don't even understand them. Hi, Tila. last year I did this. I set this challenge for myself because I also would fall out of reading books. Yeah. I think I read like one book in 2013, and so I was like, okay, 12 books this year, and I hit it. I read I think 12 or 13 books last year.
Yep.
So my goal was to do at least 12 this year. And right now I'm starting with To Kill a Mockingbird, which I don't think I've ever read. I thought I had.
Oh, interesting.
But I think I just saw the movie when I was in high school.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So I'm really enjoying it. I'm about 3/4 of the way through it. I'm liking it. I know that I'm not going to get 50 books. I'm not even sure I'm going to have 50 parameters.
Yeah, I'm not. The goal isn't necessarily always to complete these.
No, the goal is to give you something to shoot for.
Right, right. Yeah. I am reading Life of Pi, which is... kind of a relatively recent book. I think it was written mid-2000s, but got turned into a movie and all that stuff. Yep. I've never seen the movie.
There's a tiger.
There's a tiger in it.
It's a lot like Calvin and Hobbes.
It is like Calvin and Hobbes. If Calvin and Hobbes had one of the goriest scenes you'd ever read in your life in it.
So it's like the snowman strips.
The you know, it's pretty interesting so far. It is, aside from being a strange survival type of tale, there's sort of a lot of sort of spiritual undertones to it.
Okay.
The lead character, he's Hindu by birth, but he kind of comes from a relatively agnostic family.
Uh-huh.
But he gets interested in, like, in his early teens or whatever, into Hinduism. But then he also gets interested in Christianity.
Right.
And then he also gets interested in Islam. So he is kind of a... And he begins doing all the traditions for all of them. And his parents are like, you gotta pick one.
Well, there is nothing like being in a boat with a tiger to make you find God.
Well, I have a feeling... I mean, this is one of the ideas behind it. That, you know, there's... And by the way, there's no getting past the sort of notion of a... Being trapped on a boat with animals is very Ark-like.
Yeah, sure.
But it's also... It's a... Forces you into close confines with something that's dangerous, a new idea, if you will. I think the notion of his struggle with those kind of different spiritualities is going to be reflected somewhat in this.
So religion is the metaphorical tiger.
Something like that, except that there's other things other than a tiger on there. At
what?
Least at first.
Oh, I've only seen the trailer of the movie, so...
Yeah, the tiger is notable. There is also a zebra on there.
Yeah. But if someone puts you in a locked room with a bunch of animals and a tiger,
yep.
You're going to mention the tiger. You'll be like, yeah, I was with a bunch of animals and a tiger.
The tiger is the main guy.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's interesting so far. We'll see where I come down on it ultimately, but I expect to finish it probably today. So I'll have knocked off the first one on the challenge. And incidentally, for the challenge, that'll be a book by an author I haven't read.
Yeah.
There's, I think, one of the categories was a book that touches on spirituality or religion.
Sure.
So it'll definitely fill into that, which I didn't know it was going to. And there's at least one other. I think I'm forgetting it. Oh, maybe a book that was made into a movie. That was one of the other parameters.
All three of those fit To Kill a Mockingbird, too.
Yep.
Nice.
So anyway, that's how I'm doing the challenge. And that way, I think I have maybe somewhere between 20 and 30 books on my...
Wow, you think you're going to hit that?
No.
Oh, okay.
But I did make a list of things that would fill the parameters. Many of them duplicate.
That's right.
It.
You made the list. I was impressed.
Yeah. And I want to say it's somewhere between 20 and 30 books. I'm going to do what I can. Once I cross a dozen, I'll be happy.
Yeah.
But I definitely want to shoot for more if I can.
Well, the book I'm about to finish, the only thing, I need to look at the list again, but we'll only check off the over 500 pages one that I know of.
Well, that's fair. Which one is it?
It's a book called Caliban's War, which I had previously started. But it was so long ago that I actually restarted just the entire book.
Sci-fi.
It's a writing team. It's James S. A. Corey, which is two different guys writing together. But it's sort of space opera.
Okay.
And they wrote the
but
book.
Over 500 pages for a space opera. That's a little puffy.
Is it a trilogy or is it like one book?
So far, there's four books for it.
Okay.
And it's amazing writing.
Huh, okay.
So much fun. I know Friends of the Star, Jose Alves, reading them. And I found the first one, which was called Leviathan Wakes, a couple years ago.
Oh, yeah. That's on my list. I want to read that.
It is an amazing book, mainly just because it focuses on two characters and sort of gives you a real look at... You know, space travel in the future, you know, that it's...
How far?
It's probably...
Like 100 years? Or
no,
like
just, like,
of
just
years.
Like 5 years.
No, it's pretty far out there, because we have, like...
warp drives and stuff.
Yeah, things like that, and, you know, they take a realistic approach of what exactly, you know, does to the human body. They've got both elements of people living on Mars and Earth, and so there's sort of this cultural divide against them because they're not the same people because gravity works a little bit differently on
the
body.
Right, so they've sort of physically changed.
Sure.
So there's interesting aspects of that, but it's also sort of a first contact book.
Oh, okay, so there are aliens.
So this is like sort of the first notion that there might be something beyond us.
Okay.
Which I guess you can... there's a spiritual aspect of that in a way.
Yeah,
very
sure.
Small. But it's a very interesting
Well, I would
approach.
Imagine, like, it's not too hard to imagine that if there are interstellar travelers, they would be something like gods to us as far as their tech level.
Right, but it's really
weird to imagine, by the way, usually if you jump into the future, a first contact story taking place in the future.
That
usually,
far, yeah, usually it's
usually
modern
we imagine
day.
It in the present.
Yeah.
But it was cool about the first one. The first one really focused on two different characters, a person who worked for a mining company and sort of a kind of beaten-down Mars cop.
Yep.
And the second one actually it broadens the scope a little bit because the the world has changed after the events of the first one. And, you know, you get people like a person who works in a, like a mech suit, a military person, and an actual, like, diplomat for the Earth colonies. It's very, very fun, very interesting.
So ensemble cast?
Yeah, the second one's a little bit more ensemble, but it's just amazing. Yeah. I'm flying through that, it. It's so fun.
Leviathan Wakes is on my list of stuff I kind of want to read this year if I can manage it.
Yeah. Hey, Randy. Yeah. I had a thought. You know, so that's book challenges is the first
yes.
one. That we're kind of doing this through Facebook groups and stuff.
Yeah.
But it occurs
yeah.
to me it might be fun for the next one we're about to mention to maybe post it on the stores.
Oh, yeah, Facebook. I should do that, actually. Yeah. Yeah.
Which is a graphic novel challenge.
Yes. Also being run as a group on Facebook, and yeah, you can go if you go to I think is it reading group it's graphic novel challenge or something. I'll put the link up. But yeah, if you just go and ask to be added if you want to try this. But basically, we made a list.
I would also say if somebody just wants to try it, they don't need to be part of that group. We could just post the parameters on Facebook.
That's true too.
So, yeah. So you can do either.
Yeah,
or both.
Yeah, but so I made a list. Someone Jose, as mentioned before, asked if graphic novels were included in the reading challenge. We're like, well, it's kind of outside the scope. But we'd be interested in doing one, so I set up a group for graphic novel reading challenge, which is a 30 book challenge.
Yep.
Again, you don't have to finish 30 books. I'll finish 30 books in 2 or 3 months. So,
well, we buy a lot of you and I buy a lot of comics.
We read a lot of comics, but it's got a variety of parameters. We included, I believe, a book from. Published in the 60s, the 70s, the 80s, 90s, all that.
Right, or a compilation that includes that. There's you can find a lot of graphic novels published in the 50s.
Right, three yeah. books done by the same writer.
Three books from the same writer, three books from the same artist.
A horror graphic novel.
Yeah.
With a female protagonist.
Right, and yeah. a female writer, I yeah. believe, was one of the challenges.
Yeah, there's a bunch, and we come up with, and some of them are read one book in this category, some read are two or three. I am currently on my first one, actually, because it is a – if we had the parameter of over 500 pages, this would be fitting into it because I'm reading my Grendel Omnibuses finally.
Oh, wow.
So I'm reading the third Grendel Omnibus that is sort of church – future church vampire story.
Oh, yeah.
And realizing that I haven't read it in so long that it's almost like reading a new story. Like, I know vaguely where it's going, but all the details. Oh, yeah, I'm liking it quite a bit.
It hasn't become dated or anything?
No, it's not as amazing as I remember it being, but it's really good. And so I'm enjoying that. I'm going to read on through Grendel Volume 4, which completes all the Grendel stuff that's been out so far.
Does the omnibuses include all the crossovers that they did? Like the
does
Batman?
Not have Batman Grendel, sadly.
Oh, that's one of my favorite
yeah.
Grendel stories.
Yeah, Batman Grendel, because of licensing rights, is not in the omnibuses. It does have the novel that Greg Rucka wrote.
Oh.
Which is actually pretty good.
I didn't know that either.
So that's first on mine. Nick, are you reading anything particular right now?
I haven't been, so I mean...
Novel-focused?
Novel-focused. I started reading the slipcase edition of all the Lock and Key. And
oh, yeah.
Oh, that's
yeah.
a good one.
So that I will probably... I'll just read all of them, but I might say that is my horror book or something
sure,
like that.
Sure, yeah. I tend to find it's best to interpret these somewhat liberally.
Yeah.
You know, cut yourself some slack. It's not like this is a school
but
test.
But I like some
They're
of
meant
the,
to be fun.
I like some of the other categories because they are going to be getting outside of... my comfort zone. I mean, I've read manga, but I haven't read manga in a long time, and yeah. that's one of the challenges is read a manga.
Sure. Well, there was a manga that came out just the other week. I also have not read much manga lately, but you got that one right
Master
now.
Keaton. That is my manga on my list. I'm going to read
and
that.
It's from
yeah.
Naoki Urasawa, who does yep. the suspense thriller type graphic novels with,
yeah.
I would say, relatively realistic art.
Yeah.
He did
Monster and Pluto.
And Pluto, which was like took an Pluto's Astro Boy's plot from, like, you know, 30, 40 years ago and reinterpreted that specific aspect, which had, like, it was another robot.
It was
another
killer robot, yeah.
It was a robot, like, on trial or something.
It was
somewhere.
A killer robot killing all the robots from the wars, so, like, these old war veteran robots.
Right, and so, unlike the sort of lighthearted, Disney-esque Astro Boy, this, like projected it forward into a fairly realistic
yeah.
Future. And his art is always amazing, and yeah. I know he didn't draw Master Keaton, but the artist who's doing it is very
he's
much in
really
his style,
good, yeah.
and it's great. And what was the basic premise of that?
It's an investigator, but I don't remember anything more about that. I haven't looked beyond.
Right, it looks like a cool mystery suspense yeah. thing.
I'm trying to tackle the Attack on Titan Volume 1 just to see what people
yeah.
are...
Yeah, I'm curious about
so
that one,
that's
too.
What these kind of challenges are
yeah.
good for.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you had any other that are ongoing, but in February we're planning to do another movie challenge.
Right, yeah.
So that's queuing up, which is that's generally the idea on those, which only usually a few people actually pull off, is 30 movies in 30 days.
I don't think I've ever actually completed one, but it's always gets me to watch a bunch.
I think I got close, but I didn't get
like
30.
Into the 20s.
Yeah, that's where I got 20s. To, yeah. I'm looking forward to that. I've been sort of building the list in the back of my head of stuff I want to watch, and I've got some stuff sitting around ready. So
very cool.
I'm ready to do this challenge.
Do we
challenge.
Have any other lists? Or
the
is that...
only other challenge is one that Dave has passed the baton to me.
Oh, right.
And this is our burger challenge. We are planning to – a handful of us are going to go to various restaurants around town and find for us what is personally our favorite burger. And I'm sure none of us will come to the same conclusion probably because burgers are a very personal thing. That's true. We're going to go eat burgers.
A top three for each people, for each person would be interesting. You'll see what crossover there was. It'll just be interesting to find out.
I think we long ago learned that Randy and I do not like the same burgers.
No, we're very different on what we like in burgers. Yeah.
Yeah. Can you defend your choices? That's what this challenge should be about.
That's what we said. We had a criteria, and you're like, no, it's just a 1 to 10.
Well, because it's such so personal.
Yeah.
Like for you, like I know one of the criteria you wanted to have was like, you know, their ingredients, and I'm like, but you're going to get different stuff than I am, and I'm also a sort of a minimalist. I don't put a lot of stuff on my burger, so that one isn't important to me.
Yep. It'll be interesting. But now as ringleader, I can do whatever I want.
That's true.
I am the burger dictator.
You can even put so many categories in there that it's completely unfun to go out and eat a burger.
I might do that. all right. So we'll be back in just a few seconds with our top five board games and board games we want to play and role-playing games and all kinds of stuff like that. So stick around. All right, before we get into our top five games, I do have an email from one of our listeners, and you guys can always send us email. We tag it at the end of every show, you know, our email address and all that.
Chances are if you do, we'll respond to it.
Yeah, we don't get a ton of email. We'd love to get more. In fact, if you just want to send us an email saying, hey, I listen to the podcast and I like it, so we know we're not just screaming out of the void, that would be great.
Or you could give us a virtual hug.
Or a virtual hug. But one of our fervent listeners who has talked to us in the store mentioned he's listened to it. We appreciate it. He's also bought us T-shirts. And
he's a good guy all around.
He's a good guy. He's a longtime customer. Steve Maggi. He sent us his top five comics for the year.
So before we get to the games, we thought we would just quick run through.
Yeah, we're going to quick shout out for Steve's top five game or top five comics, which he names a few that we didn't mention. So his 1 through 5, just real quick.
Starting with?
Number one.
Okay.
Number one, Afterlife with Archie. Number two, Low from Image.
I haven't read Low yet, but I'd like to check that one out.
Yeah. Number three, She-Hulk, which we all mentioned.
Righteous.
Number four, All-Star Western. It says due to how much he's going to miss Jonah Hex.
Yep.
And
that was always a well-done book and had some amazing artwork on it.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, they got people like Darwin Cook on it. To do an issue here.
I believe this last year was the one that had him doing the time travel stuff. So he was in the present day, like riding around on like a Harley, I think.
Yeah.
Interacting with like various DC characters.
Yep.
It was pretty cool from what I saw.
And number five is Earth 2, which he mentions is, you know, having lost the Golden Age stuff. It's sort of, he says, it's almost like reading a really long miniseries.
Well, that's interesting.
So, thanks for sending that in, Steve. And if anyone has not checked out those books, maybe give them a look.
Yep.
And now we're going to tackle games. It is we had a lot of comic stuff last week, and we realized we don't talk about games as much on this podcast.
It's true.
And partly that's because it's hard to talk games. I mean, we mention them. We've a lot of the games that are in our top five. We've talked about on our topic section,
right?
But we don't talk about like the weekly releases and stuff. It's sort of you can't keep up as well with comics.
Well,
games.
We cannot casually peruse the way or read the way we do comics.
Right.
A game we can't unbox them, bust them out of their shrink wrap and stuff like that.
Right.
So unfortunately, just sort of one of the truisms of a sort of a small business to some degree.
Yeah.
But I know that I would like to make more time for games this year, so I'm going to try to.
And that was one of my resolutions. I played 20 games last year.
That's
which was a
good.
Big number for me. Yeah. Now, our gamer listeners are going, 20 games? I played on a weekend.
Right.
But for us, that was a pretty good – for me, that's a pretty good number.
We're busy selling them.
But so our lists are going to be not so much best games of 2014 – because I don't know that we played a lot of games that came out this year. I think a couple of mine came out this year.
Right.
But it's going to be the best games we played in 2014, our favorite games from this year.
And games have a certain timelessness. As long as they're in print, they're viable.
Yep.
So hopefully these should still be games to try out if you haven't.
Yep. And all the games on my list are in print. I believe there's only one that we don't have right at the moment. So we're gonna start with the top with number five and go around. Is that the plan?
Sure.
Okay.
Sure.
So my fifth game is the only game on my list that came out in 2014. Sorry, King of New York.
Okay.
Which is a it's a dice based game. It is you're playing giant monsters, kaiju, basically. And there was originally a game called King of Tokyo. It's by Richard Garfield, who did Magic the Gathering and all that kind of stuff. I believe we talked about that on the podcast. Yeah. But basically, you're a giant monster trying to battle for supremacy of Tokyo. King of New York...
Are you fighting each other out of curiosity, or are you trying to, like, do the most damage?
You're fighting each other.
Okay.
And King of New York sort of expands a little bit. So you're still fighting each other, but now they've added little buildings you can destroy for bonus points.
Nice.
And when you destroy the building, it flips over and becomes a tank or a plane or something like that. And then there are dice that make the tanks and planes, whatever, attack whoever's in their area.
Oh, interesting.
So there's one, you know, there's one that has all the units in your area will attack you. Then there's, if you get a couple dice, it's like they'll all attack everybody. And there's one where it attacks everybody in every other borough or whatever.
No, that reminds me of some of the mechanics I remember in, like, seeing, was it Roll Through the Ages?
Yeah.
Where, like, when the plagues hit, you know, it's like it could hit just you or it could hit everybody in the group.
Yeah.
And, yeah, you can sort of do various risk-taking things with
it's a similar thing. It's
okay.
Definitely a similar
That's
thing.
That's cool.
But it's really fun. It's really easy to pick up and easy to teach and good for all ages. Like, my kids like it, but it's also just kind of fun to play for adults. And the King of New York was a really fun evolution of the gameplay. It added a couple little tweaks, but still feels very much like what I liked about King of Tokyo.
It is a standalone, is that right?
It's a standalone, yeah. So that's my number five.
Nicholas?
Yes. My number five is also very easy to teach and is a lot of fun. I've talked about it on the podcast before, so it's going to be a little bit of a rehash. It is Love Letter.
Yeah.
Which, actually, I think we mentioned the variant, the
Letter to Santa.
Letters to Santa, which hit during the holidays, which is looked like a lot of fun. I would like to play it as well. But the main game is just really very simple. It's 18 cards. 16 cards or 18 cards? I forget.
Okay.
Your notion is to get your love letter to the princess. And to do that, you have to get, like, the highest ranking cards. So, you know, you have... forget some of the... Like, the person who is next to the princess, her... helper, or you know, if you're like a guard, or like
you're trying to move up the ladder, basically.
You're essentially trying to move up the ladder, exactly.
Yeah,
and it's very simple. You can play very quickly. It plays up to four players.
I remember just glancing at it that the art looked nice on the cards.
Oh,
you know?
The art is nice. The package it comes in is actually just a nice, really nice red bag.
It's like a little velvet bag.
Yeah.
It looks like a little Crown Royal kind of thing.
And they're also doing a lot of variants of it. The Lost Legacy, which is the Starship, like the sci-fi variant.
Right.
There's a Munchkin Loot Letter.
There's a Legend of the Five Rings version that just sort of takes the original. I believe the original was, is it Chinese game originally?
Yeah, I think so.
And I believe they reskinned it just with new visuals from Legend of the Five Rings. So, you know, if you happen to be a fan of that RPG system and card games, you know, that might be more up your alley. But they, you know, I think they used a root mechanic, which is apparently a pretty cool mechanic.
Yeah. Well, and it's one of these games I believe that's really quick. I've not played it yet, but it's a quick play game.
Yeah,
you can play it while waiting for other games at a game
night.
It's
basically you're trying to win several rounds and you get little cubes that... As much as you can get, you're wanting to get like four or five cubes to
sort
win
of like traditional
game.
Card games where you don't necessarily play a hand and you're done. You might play several hands
because each
might
card
play.
Has a specific power, and you know you can play that power, and you're trying to knock everybody else out of the round.
Yeah. Okay.
It's very simple mechanics, but it's really beautiful.
Dave, what's your top five? What's your
number five for me is the hard to find Betrayal at House on the Hill.
Yeah.
It was on what's Will Wheaton's show?
Tabletop.
It was on Tabletop, and that amped up the demand, and I think it's been a tough one to find ever since. We do get it periodically.
Yeah.
I think we're out right at the moment.
I believe we're either out or we have one. I think we probably sold it at holiday time.
Right.
It's a Wizards of the Coast game. You'd think it'd be easier to get, but it goes out of print.
Anyway, it's a horror board game. It's build a new house each time. You represent however many players you have, but you're like sort of average types. You know, there's I'm trying to remember who all they are suddenly, but it's like a little girl and a tough guy and a reporter. You know that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And you're going into the house. There's a mysterious twist that occurs in each game about halfway through. You kind of explore in the first half. You just prowl around. You flip over tiles. They can activate things that'll attack you or small little traps. But the big threat doesn't show up till a little ways into the game. So the first part is just kind of fun, honestly.
Yeah, yeah.
And then when that happens, there's a random thing that determines one of like 50 different scenarios. So you have a ton of different scenarios. The first time I played it, we ran into a banshee.
Okay.
But it could have been a vampire, a werewolf, or as I mentioned in a previous podcast, a giant bird that rips up the entire house.
Okay.
And carries you into the air. And then the players, generally one player becomes the betrayer.
Yeah.
They have to, they look at their section in the booklet that only they see that tells what their goals are, and they try to accomplish that. And the players have certain set goals too. Like the banshee had to kill all of us in some specific way that we didn't know what it was. So yeah. There's a little bit of mystery solving in there. And we had to find a way to, we had to exorcise the banshee, which meant going to certain rooms, getting certain artifacts. Some of those rooms hadn't even shown up yet, so you might have to keep exploring the house while it's now being haunted by a banshee. Anyway, it's a fairly lightweight game, I'd say. Pretty easy for the average person to pick up. Not a dense Euro game with lots and lots of rules. But a really ideal horror game for the whole family.
All right, number four on my list is a game that I first played. It's also on tabletop. In fact, I think a lot of these would have been. Forbidden Desert.
Oh, yeah.
Which is a cooperative game.
It's much higher on my list.
Yeah.
Forbidden Desert is on my my almost made it list because it was a great game.
And it's from the designer Pandemic.
Yes, right? It is.
And it is basically your airship crashes in the desert.
And it's a co-op game.
It's a cooperative game. Your airship crashes in the desert, and the parts are scattered. There are four parts that are scattered. And your guys, who are guys like an explorer or
a mountaineer,
they all have a special ability. In the middle of this big sandstorm, you have to wander through this desert, find the four pieces, and put your airship together before the beating sun kills you.
Right. And the neat mechanic of the game is that there's these shifting sand dunes.
Yeah,
and on your turn,
sandstorm that's just roving through, creating dunes.
Right, yeah. So you start end up getting boxed in by it, and your guys are dying of thirst.
Right,
and one person might have water that they can get to you, but it's tough, and so everybody is like kind of pulling out all the stops to survive as you frantically try and find this sort of steampunk flying machine.
Right. Yeah, and it's a lot of fun. It's got that same Pandemic thing where you lose more often than you win, but it's kind of fun even than losing.
And the working together, like, it's A-team style.
Yeah.
I love it when a plan comes together. When you pull off a win, it's so cool.
Yep, yep.
And it's just the production values on it are fantastic.
It actually has a literal physical little flying machine that you can put the little pieces together as you find them.
Yep, yeah. And it's a cheap game. I mean, I think it's like $25.
Yeah.
It's really cheap for what you get.
Yeah. Honestly, board games are a little bit pricey these days, or the biggest ones can be. So it's nice to find one that... Yeah,
it and its counterpart, Forbidden Island, are both very reasonable.
They come in these really nice tins. They look cool. They have great gameplay, and yet relatively inexpensive.
Yep. Nick, what's your number four?
My four, which I know is on both of your lists, much higher, but I have only played it once... it is Firefly.
Oh, yeah, it's very high on my list.
I know it's high on your list. I know you've played it a lot.
I've played like six times.
Yeah, and I've played it once, but I really had a lot of fun playing. I played it on my... it was the day before my wedding, wasn't it?
Yes, I believe it was.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Or something along those lines. And it was just a lot of fun. I got to play as Mal because...
Oh, that's right.
We gave you Mal and we gave you the Serenity.
But then the Reavers ate most of my crew.
The Reavers did.
That's true.
But it's really just the mechanics of the game are great. You know, you get sort of, you know, your mission, your initial missions, right? I mean, you get to do very Firefly-ish things.
The basics of it are everybody has a Firefly-class ship and a captain. Yeah. And then you go around recruiting crew... And getting missions from Badger and some of the other guys from the show. Patience.
Yeah.
And, of course, Niska. And you get jobs from them. And you've got the goals of the game are always different. I've played with different goals because there's different goals in each one.
The goal that we played was...
You were just supposed to buy your own ship. Just get enough money to buy it.
Yeah, the basic game, you got to get solid with all the contacts, which means you got to do a job successfully for all of them. Then you've got to get $6,000 and buy your ship.
Right. That's correct.
Yep.
Oh, by the way, I just have to say, I know we probably mentioned this originally, but the space bucks that it comes with, they look amazing.
Oh, the production values are amazing on this game.
Everything. And I really, really love the core game, but I know you've told me about your antics.
I've played the expansions,
especially the Blue Sun one.
That adds more Reavers.
And adds more to the actual board itself, which I think is really, really cool. And I know the Pirate expansion.
Yeah, Pirates and Outlaws had multiplayer, and I haven't actually played that one yet. I've got it, but I haven't played it yet.
You know, in addition to hiring crew, of course, you also get gear.
Yeah.
So, you know, you trick out your ship.
Yeah.
You get, like, the little, what's the little hovercraft thing? That
the mule.
The mule from the Serenity movie. All that kind of stuff you can get, too.
I think the thing that's the most impressive about the game is the fact that it really feels Firefly.
Yeah.
The board game, it sort of just evokes all the classic Firefly-isms that you can sort of think of.
Yeah.
And it's just really, really good. You build a Firefly story as you play, and
Well, the other thing, it's very daunting because it looks like there's a lot of pieces and a lot of equipment, but it actually is really quick. I mean, the very basic gameplay as far as once you explain it, there's four basic moves you do, a variety within there, but explaining the game and playing the game, you learn it quickly.
Yeah.
And but there's still a lot of challenge to it. I was a little worried this was going to be one of these super long, overly complex games. And it's longer than I usually play. I mean, it tends to go about 3 hours.
Yeah.
But it was so much fun and so easy to play.
You know, it's probably a little bit like, although it's a different type of game, the Battlestar Galactica game is like that too.
Yeah.
It's from Fantasy Flight. It has a zillion pieces.
Yeah.
But the actual mechanics of it are relatively simple.
Right.
You know, you do something to try and help on your turn, and then you draw a card that helps the Cylons or, you know, that might move forward bad guy plots.
Yeah.
But it's not, it has lots of stuff. It's not as complicated as it looks.
Yeah. Dave, what is number four on your list?
My number four one is, I think we've talked about it here, is the Lord of the Rings living card game.
Yeah, you mentioned that.
Yeah, my brother and I play that every once in a while. And I think one of our customers, Chris Jones, is maybe going to join us next time we do it. It's a game that you can play actually anything from solo up to, I think, maybe four players.
Mm-hmm.
And each one of you will control a few different heroes of Lord of the Rings. From notable characters to lesser-known characters from the book, sort of obscure side characters can still take the reins. So just like the Firefly game, it sort of feels like you are creating a maybe alternate history. But it's a card game in which you have sort of multiple phases. You build a deck before the game, and from that deck, you might be more geared towards like lore. Sort of the scouting around. You might be more combat-oriented. And you try and all work together to resolve some storyline. So an example might be, they're like little mini-missions. One of them is the one with the trolls from The Hobbit.
Okay.
That'd be an example.
Yeah.
Or when they're going down the river in the Anduin in, was it Fellowship of the Ring, and the orcs are after them from the banks and stuff like that. That would be another. What I found that really impresses me about the game is that each different scenario is geared to feel like that scenario. When you're, for instance, the Anduin one has like creatures have to attack you from a distance. There's no close combat in that one, so it simulates being on like literally on the on like a raft or something like
you're
that.
You're on a boat.
On a boat, yes. In the Hobbit Trolls one, the trolls have an early attack that they can do where they will sack several of you. They'll put you in bags, like they gathered up. They call the dwarves and the hobbit, and you can only like Bilbo can get you out, and so it's like you need to find cards that have him in them. There's still other ways to stop them, so you're not like you don't lose the game if it happens,
right?
But it becomes considerably tougher if Bilbo hasn't shown up.
Yeah,
and it always they're hugely thematic. So if you like, any sort of deck-building games or card games in general, and you like Lord of the Rings, it's kind of a must-play, I'd say.
All right. Number three on my list is a game that we finally got in stock. We had to jump through some hoops to get it. We had to do sort of a little markup, which Nick and I hate doing.
Yes,
The only way we could make any money on it at all was to mark it up slightly from its MSRP, because the only way to get it was online.
Right.
But we had so many requests during the holidays, and we've all played it and liked it.
And the game is?
And the game is Cards Against Humanity. I had resisted this for the longest time because I really was resenting the fact that we couldn't get it. And we got calls all the time for it.
Well, I remember we were going to, like, a year ago or so, we were going to do the same thing we just did.
Yeah.
But we held off because that's when they announced that they were going to distribute through independent game stores like us.
And
we're
like, they still haven't done it.
They still haven't done it.
Yeah.
We sort of, like, spent the last year twiddling our thumbs and wishing we could sell the game.
Yeah. So finally, I played it, despite my disdain for their business practices because everyone's talking about how great it is. And I played it, and it is indeed a blast, especially if you play with – you want to play with people you know.
Yeah.
And you want to play with people with pretty sick sense of humor.
Yeah.
Right. If the person is prudish or just doesn't like those kind of dirty jokes.
Or honestly politically correct. If you're offended by what is – I mean there is – this game is homophobic, racist, transphobic, sexist.
Yes. All of those things could show up in there, and it's only going to be, you know, the only way you're going to get the value out of the game, basically, and the value you get is by laughing.
Yeah.
Laughing your ass off.
Yeah. It's because it's boundary pushing. That's what makes it funny.
If you
yeah.
say some politically incorrect things.
Yes.
Yeah. So, yes, you have to be prepared to do that.
Yeah. So, I'm not going to give any of the examples because who knows who's listening. I don't want to offend anybody, but oh my God, the game we played New Year's with like 10 people.
Yep.
And basically, the basic of the game, it is literally a dirty apples to apples.
Yeah.
You have a card, the black card, something you'll play, and it'll be something like...
It's a fill-in-the-blank.
Fill-in-the-blank, yeah. It'll be something like the one of those, worst day ever, hashtag blank.
Right. Or, you know, the thing that makes me happy, it's blank.
Blank, yeah.
And you will have a variety, everybody has a hand of cards.
Yes,
with
everything from like celebrities like Michael Jackson or Arnold Schwarzenegger to... horrible, horrible things that I'm not even going to name.
Right. Yeah. Just, terrible things, but very funny things.
Yeah.
Everybody plays their card face down.
Yeah.
You kind of mix them up. The guy who has the black card looks at them, picks whatever one makes them laugh.
Well, he reads them off and then picks their favorite.
Off, which is really, that's the heart of the game.
That's the heart of the game.
Is just get kind of everybody laughing over that. And generally, whatever one entertains them most wins, and that person gets a point.
And the reason we finally got it, by the way, is that there is no game like this. Like, there is no – if someone's looking for cards against – someone usually if someone's looking for a game, I can recommend another game.
Right.
Like, someone says, oh, you're out. I like Settlers. What else is right? Oh, well, you should try Carcassonne. You should try maybe Roll Through the Ages. You know, if I like King of Tokyo, well, maybe you should try RAR or, you know, have you tried Smash Up? Right. You know, there's usually games where I'm like, okay, they're not the same mechanics, but if you like this game, you might like this game. Cards Against Humanity, if you like that, there's really it's hard to find anything that's sort of comparable.
Right. People want the dirty humor of it specifically. Yeah.
And it's a party game.
Right.
You can play with a lot of people.
Apples to apples, really, because it's just not there.
Not the same. Yeah. So we are carrying it now, and one of the reasons is because I loved it so much that it was number three on my list.
Yeah.
Nick, you're number three?
I'm sorry, Nick. I was just going to say, hopefully they will still distribute through us at some point.
And when they do, the prices will go down.
Right. We would love for them to do that, and yes, I'd be able to sell it at a lower price.
It's true.
All right. Nick.
My number three one
Wait, Nick, before you get started.
Okay. You know, if you got something to say.
I don't. I just want to interrupt
you. I know. No, my third one is a game I think I actually just talked about very recently.
Yeah.
It was...
Just played.
It is Machikoro. Again, very simple, very easy to learn. You can learn the sort of basics in like 10 minutes, which is you are a person wanting to construct a new town. So you the goal of the game is to turn over four cards at the top of basically four cards. One each represents like a radio tower, a carnival, transportation type thing.
Mm-hmm.
And basically you're wanting to spend enough money to build those, but to get the money...
Will each person have like different ones?
No, they're all the same.
Oh, okay.
So, and to pay for those, you have to build up your smaller aspects of your town. You have to get like your restaurants and your, you know, like, to build like, you know, cafes, things like that.
Well, does everybody have their own town or is it a shared town?
No, it's everybody has their own town. Okay. You basically want to be the one to create it.
Right, you're like rival city planners.
Pretty much. And there are cards that will help you, like, get, you know, X amount of dollars if, when the dice are rolled, everybody who has something that, you know, corresponds with the dice gets paid. There's also cards that can kind of hose other opponents, sort of like Munchkin-esque. It just depends on how, you know, bad the people... competitive the people are at the table. Because when I played the game, none of us did that. And maybe because we're all nice people. I don't know.
Well, it's sort of like Ticket to Ride. You can sort of play to build tracks, or you can play to block people.
Yeah.
Or any mixture thereof. But I tend to, when I play it, I tend to sort of play to build my own stuff.
Yeah, you don't go cutthroat.
But you can do that.
Yeah.
And there are sort of Dominion-esque like qualities to it with the resources, because there's sort of a static set of resources in sort of the middle area where you're trying to gather things from. And I know there's an expansion coming out hopefully soon. Like,
yeah.
Is it the harbor?
Yeah.
Which will change that static things up, because they're always going to be the same at the moment. But when that expansion comes out, things are going to be changed up, and we'll have different items to choose from that will do different things. So it will actually add to the chaos that can happen. But I really, really enjoyed the game. It was a lot of fun.
How quick does it play?
We played it in about maybe a little over an hour, or a little, probably... It, once you kind of get the hang of it, because it was our first time, it was probably like 45 minutes.
Okay. But, so a pretty brisk game.
Yeah,
yeah, it is. Dave, what is your number three?
My number three is Star Trek Attack Wing.
Okay.
The Star Trek miniature game I've been waiting my whole life for. It's got cool ships. You get to trick out your ships depending on how many points you each player puts into the game to build them up however you want. Do you want to make sure, you know, your ship has photon torpedoes? Do you want to have experimental technology? Do you want to have a cloaking device? You know, what captain do you want? Would you rather have Picard, or would you rather have some average guy and put more of your points into special weapons and stuff like that? So you get to do all your sort of Star Trek dream ship building, along with cool maneuvering and tactics in the game itself. Not a ton to say about it other than, you know, it's always expanding. There's new ships coming out. Yep. Each ship comes with its own set of captains and weapons.
There might be a Deep Space Nine and a Borg cube that you
can... Yeah, we've talked about both of those on the show. Yeah, and those are both cool.
So, yeah, it's I would say it's a must for fans of Trek if you've ever wanted to, like, recreate the sort of naval ship type, you know, spaceship battles that they do.
Yeah.
It is an excellent time.
Number two on my list is one that I believe I mentioned a little bit, Roll Through the Ages.
Yep. I tried that. I've only played that once, but I really liked it too.
And there's two. There's a Bronze Age and an Iron Age. And I believe Iron Age is the new one. Yes. Yeah. And sure. Iron Age was the one we were able to get. Bronze Age is out and seems to be unavailable. The Iron Age slightly tweaks the gameplay. And I actually like Bronze Age a little bit better, but Iron Age is a lot of fun too. And basically you're building a Iron Age or Bronze Age civilization where you're trying to build cities and monuments and keep your people fed, and then there are invasions.
But
and
it's hidden through dice pools.
It's all hidden through dice pools and a little tablet that you write down what you're building.
Yeah.
Really fun, simple mechanics, very playable, very easy to learn, and I just had a blast playing it.
It's neat because each time you do it, you feel like you build a very different civilization. You're like, oh, this is a warmongering civilization. Yeah. Or this one tends to build monuments and idols to wow its people.
Right.
But you always have to keep them fed, too. And, you know, so you're always trying to juggle a few different things.
Yeah, and it reminds me, it plays a lot like it combines the sort of dice rolling and quickness of King of Tokyo with sort of the more strategy of something like Civilization, which I think is really cool.
Yeah, it's like a little mini Civ.
Yep. Nick, what is number two on your list?
We have already talked about it, and it is Forbidden Desert.
Yeah.
So
okay.
I will not. There's nothing more to add.
Dave, number two on your list?
Number two on my list is Firefly,
which we've covered.
Yeah, I really liked Firefly. I don't think I have anything else particularly to add to that. But I would encourage people to try this one out. I know the show has a huge fan base, and it's already done really well for us.
Yeah.
But what I was going to say earlier is, if you haven't played it, see if you have a friend who's got it. I think that's the best way to learn it.
Yeah.
It is intimidating on its own. It just looks like a lot of stuff. It's not that bad.
Yep. And that is number one on my list is Firefly. That was my favorite game this year. I played the hell out of it. I'm looking forward to playing a lot more in 2015. Nick, what's your number one?
My number one is Star Wars, the X-Wing mini miniatures game. Because it feeds into both of... just a great game with great mechanics.
Uses the same mechanics Attack Wing.
Yep. But it also feeds into my I like things
because
the models are so damn cool.
Yeah.
I mean,
they accomplished something the Star Trek guys didn't, which is they have a higher level of paint quality.
They're insanely detailed.
But they also, I think they got better with the scaling. The Star Trek guys didn't quite know whether they wanted to scale these accurately or not early on. And the Star Wars guys are like, we're just gonna do that. So you have
Scaling's not 100% because their rebel ships and stuff are a little smaller than they would be.
Are they?
Yeah.
I don't know if it's not if it's 100%, but it's higher.
If you took the Millennium Falcon and put it next to an X-Wing, looks about
it's
right.
It's close. Yeah, it's close.
And then if you then put one of like the big rebel transport next to it, it's close.
Yeah.
So and they look beautiful.
Like
No, they're great. And you know,
You can almost buy it just to buy the miniatures.
Yeah, and that's sort of what it is for me, but I also just love the gameplay. It's so easy to play, and just sort of the dogfighting aspect of it.
Well, there were some times when we were playing it that I was like, what is Nick going to do?
Right, and that's sort
like,
of
is he going to go hard right so he doesn't go off the board or whatever? Or is he going to surprise me by going head-on like a maniac? And you try and out-guess him, because you both have to choose your sort of movement simultaneously. And then you have some options within that. Like, if you have certain hotshot pilots or something like that, you might be able to every once in a while change your movement at the last minute. But a lot of times, you know, you have to try and outthink the person. So you're, aside from what just whatever your raw ship's power is,
yeah,
you have to be a clever pilot.
Yeah, there differences between the Star Trek attack wing and Star Wars is that each, you know, for Star Wars, every ship has just a specific pilot. You can't
right, it's
swap
like
them.
Luke's X-Wing.
Right, it's Luke's X-Wing, or it's, you know, somebody else's X-Wing. It's not somebody
Wedge could, or Biggs.
Right.
Or the man Porkins.
Sure. You can't put Luke in, like, the Millennium Falcon. It's right. It's a little more different
and
than
that. And that makes sense. You know, Star Trek was more likely to show, like, well, you know, several of the Star Trek movies had them flying around in a captured
Bird
of Prey.
Right.
So, you know, that's pretty common for other people to captain other ships at some time or another. Star Wars tends to be people defy their ships.
Right. And then, you know, you do get the aspect of, you know, do I want more weapons or, you know, focusing on this? Do I need, like, a cloaking device?
An R2 unit.
Right. Do I need an R2 unit? And there is that funness to it as well. But I will say that this coming year has got a lot of exciting things for X-Wing because they're going to add a third faction, finally. The Scum and Villainy faction.
Oh, nice.
Going to have the IG-88 ships coming out pretty soon.
So it's going to be like bounty hunters and smuggler types?
Yep. And they're going to actually, the smugglers are going to have versions of the X-Wing and the B-Wing. So sort of,
people
have cultivated those and turned it into their own sort of villainy and scum stuff.
That's awesome.
Which is kind of a neat idea.
Yeah.
Fantasy Flight also announced they're doing an Imperial Corvette Star Destroyer.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
A scaled down version of a Star Destroyer, but it's going to be on the size of probably the Tantive.
Yeah.
Which is insane. And
yeah, Princess Leia's blockade. Yeah.
And I will have to have that because it's a Star Destroyer.
Yeah.
So I'm excited to see what this year holds for it, and because it's going to be very, very cool.
Dave, what is your number one?
Number one has been touched on. It is Cards Against Humanity.
Yeah.
It is, you know, I almost feel like I'm betraying the more sophisticated games out there by picking it. But just for raw fun,
I
have not laughed my ass off more at any other game this year or kind of just had more immediate fun. It's a great, you know, we don't do as many party games in the store.
No.
It's just kind of not what stores like us do.
Yeah.
But that one is way up there. Even at the top, it's the number one spot.
It was close to mine. I mean, mine the only one got pushed down because I love Firefly so much and I love Roll Through the Ages so much. But Cards Against Humanity is one of the games you drag it out every occasion.
Yep. you know, finding just that right combination of obscene ideas is a magical thing. It's or predicting what somebody will like. I'm like, all right, I know this guy's sense of humor, who's got the card.
Yeah.
I know that he will appreciate this properly crass joke.
Yep. Yeah.
And then just hearing the crazy stuff that other people come up with, because I was like, oh man, I wish I had that card. anyway, so that's my top spot.
Well, and Cards Against Humanity, they also, the expansions all come with blank cards.
Yes.
So we have added our own.
I think we can say what the one is.
The topic is Rogues Gallery Comics and blank.
Right.
And
if you played the game, just start filling in the various dirty and horrible ideas.
Yeah, and that's how we've been closing out the games, and it's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
So, that's our top five. We also are going to talk about our top five games we're looking forward to playing in the new year.
Which, again, might be new games, or I think you have primarily new games, Randy, but I mostly have games that have come out.
No, mine are mostly games that have come out as well.
Okay.
Yeah. We're going to hit that real quick. But before we do, a quick stop over in the world of role-playing.
Yes.
Because I just want to mention Dungeons & Dragons 5th Edition.
Yep.
That came out this year and has just been just overwhelmingly beloved.
Which was a surprise to all of us.
Surprise to all of us. Surprise to me. I didn't think I'd want any.
We thought Pathfinder had won.
Yeah.
And our store, sales-wise, for like a year or two, it has. D&D let itself disappear.
Yeah.
We thought, well, when it comes back, unless it's great, and the playtests were good, but we weren't hearing anybody saying, this is amazing, I'm going to stop playing Pathfinder for it.
Yeah.
So we're like, unless they do that, or they have the best marketing campaign in the world,
which there's
no way it is going to become, make its way to the top again.
And we were wrong.
And we were wrong
because That was it. Was definitely the bestseller for Christmas time.
Yes.
In fact, we're out of half the game. I mean, the player's handbook's unavailable right now.
The problem is that it's actually out at our distributor.
It's out of the publisher,
which means it's doing so well that they can't keep up with the demand.
Yeah.
Yeah. We ordered lots of these.
Yeah. Oh yeah, we've ordered a ton of it. But I finally got Dave. You got a chance to play it early on.
Yeah.
And then I finally got a chance to play it this weekend.
Did you do the box set or just
we did the player's handbook. We used player's handbook. The DM sort of had us all build our characters using the player's handbook stuff, and their background rules are really neat. Uh-huh. So if you come up with backgrounds. So before we did classes and race and everything, we did backgrounds to see what we were beforehand. So my guy was from the Artisan Guild, but I decided he wanted to be a brewer, and he was trying to build the best brew of all time. Yeah. And
you
so that's sort
a
of
very flavorful character quite quickly.
So that led him to sort of become a gnome wizard, and they all have different abilities. And so we got to try out the rogue abilities, the fighter stuff, the spells. We bumped to third.
Okay.
Just to try it out a little bit.
Yeah, that's a good place to be.
And he ran an adventure based off of the various tables in the Dungeon Master's Guide, which I have heard this Dungeon Master's Guide is great.
Yeah.
You don't hear that a lot. Usually Dungeon Master's Guide is the also-ran book.
Right.
But it's got
they might be well done, but you wouldn't expect it to be particularly good.
Well, in addition to having all the magic items in it, it also has a variety of tables, like locations and plot devices and stuff, so you can sort of build an adventure on the fly.
Right, and not like I think they've done that in the past, but it's like nobody ever really does it.
Not very good. Yeah,
this sounds like it's really applicable.
This is really well done. He ran the adventure out of that. It worked really well. We fought some thugs and a bunch of goblins.
Uh-huh.
And I was playing a wizard, and what I really liked, there were two mechanics I really liked. One is advantage and disadvantage.
Right.
That's the big fifth edition rules mechanic, is that if you have advantage, which could be anything from your flanking,
you
surprise them, or whatever bonus, then you roll 2d20s and you take the highest roll.
Right. So, like, if you got the jump on some goblins in the forest, everybody is going to get to roll 2d20s for that first attack.
Yeah. And if you have disadvantage, you roll 2d20s and take the lowest. And that could be it's darkness, or you're wounded, or...
Well, in my case, I was playing a fighter when I played, and he used his bow a decent amount, he had those javelins, which actually turned out to be pretty cool. But they had range limits, and although we weren't playing with miniatures, there were broad discussions.
Yeah,
I appreciate that it was a little more abstract.
Yeah, we didn't use minis either.
Yeah. But there were times it was clear they were beyond my basic range.
Yeah.
And if they were in the extended range of it, then I rolled with disadvantage.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's perfect. I'm a little less, more likely to fail. Makes sense.
And the nice thing is the way advantage and disadvantage stacks is if you have three advantages and four disadvantages, you have disadvantage.
Right.
So, you know, in D&D in general, it's like, well, you get +2 for this, +3 for this, +2 for this, and -1. You got to do a lot of math.
Yeah, it was like you were doing some sort of algorithm.
Yeah. This is I've got three things give me advantage and four things give me disadvantage, so I got disadvantage.
Right.
And more often than not, it's one or two things.
You can't have, like, disadvantage x3 or advantage x3.
Yeah, no. It's just you either have it or you don't.
60-20s.
Yeah.
And the other thing I really liked was the way they did wizards, the magic system, because basically instead of having to memorize, say, magic missile twice and shield once, I memorize four spell slots that I can cast. They're all fourth or first level, and then I can cast four first level spells from those four slots. So if I wind up having, if I wind up having to cast four magic missiles, I can cast four magic missiles.
Get to choose them on the fly?
Not really. It's not full on sorcerer. You don't get to choose from your entire spell list.
Okay.
I have a spell book of, I think it was like eight first level spells.
Yeah.
I choose four of those at the beginning of the day that I have memorized.
Oh, okay.
And then I can cast any combination of those four.
Right. But you don't have to do the old, well, I think we're going to get into heavy combat, so I better make them all magic missiles.
Yeah, three magic missiles.
Even though I'd like to have one hold person.
Right. It gives you more variety. So I had a magic missile, I had a shield, and then I had like a comprehend languages and something else. I didn't wind up using the comprehend languages, but it was there if I needed it.
Right.
Which is very different. And then also,
I like that a lot better.
All the spells scale. So magic missile does the base magic missile does 3 1d4 +1 missiles,
right,
which is a higher level. That's a much higher spell to start with, and then you can cast it from your second level slot.
Right. So if you want to amp it up.
So if I cast my second, if I use one of my second level slots as a magic missile, then it adds an extra d4 to it. So and then the higher level you go, so you can get to the point where you're casting. If you're casting like, there's some spells that scale, like if you cast it at third level, it does one thing. If you cast it at fifth level, it does another. And sort of the range will get bigger, or if it's an area effect, the area will get bigger. And sort of all this. So instead of having protection from evil at first level and magic circle against evil 10 feet at third level, you have protection from evil. And then if you cast it as a third level spell, it's better.
Right. What happens if it's a fifth level comprehend languages?
I don't think anything.
You can really comprehend it.
But I really...
sounds like a much better mechanic.
It gives you a lot of flexibility, and it still makes sorcerers and wizards different.
Right.
And I really, really liked it. I thought it was a great way to do things. And Magic System is... The only gripe I have, and this is the one thing I missed from, I think, 4th edition to this, is I still wish that if you are first level, you cast first level spells. If you're second level, you cast second level spells.
Right.
Like, but they didn't do... Because they don't want to have 20 levels of spells.
Right.
So they want to have 9 levels of spells, so they don't quite line up exactly.
Right.
And that's still a little bit weird to me, but I know that's a D&D thing. You're used to it.
Right.
But... I was very impressed with that mechanic, and I saw the rogue doing various roguey things, and I liked the mechanics a lot. I was skeptical because I really like Pathfinder, and I still like Pathfinder. I was going to play Pathfinder for various things, but if you want a simpler game...
Out of curiosity, if you had to choose between the two for you to run, what would you choose?
Right now, I'd choose Pathfinder.
Okay.
There's just not enough support for D&D yet. That is what Pathfinder shines in terms of having a ton of material, four bestiaries, a lot of different classes... I like the variety you can get from Pathfinder, and I'm a veteran gamer. I've played all this stuff. None of this stuff is really that confusing to me.
Right.
But if you're just getting into D&D, we've always wanted something that you can, you know, where all the kids who want to get into D&D can get into it. This is much easier to comprehend.
Well, I also am a person who doesn't like heavy mechanics or micromanaging.
Right.
So, like, if I were to between the two, I would probably go with 5e.
Yeah.
Although I'm actually a little bit more likely to probably do 13th Age of the new year,
right?
Because I like it slightly more indie sensibilities, but it's in the ball more in the ballpark of 5e,
right?
So, but I like that there's some good competitive gaming systems right now.
Yeah.
So you can, depending on what your sensibilities are, you can find a pretty good, pretty great fantasy role playing system for you. In fact, I would say between those three, Pathfinder, D&D, and 13th Age. And there's, of course, more indie options and stuff in that mix, too. But those three are three notable ones that give you a lot of choices.
Yep. All right. We're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be back with our games that we want to play in the new year. So we are now going to talk about our
anticipated games. Should we go around the table, or should each one of us do our five and kind of do it in a quicker format?
We'll do our five because I think at least two of the ones on mine were on last you guys played last year.
Okay.
So we'll just run down our top five. Yeah. And again, this is all stuff. I have one game that's coming out in 2015. Everything else has already been out.
Okay.
I mean, I don't know what else is coming out in 2015, so I can't do my anticipated games that are coming out.
Exactly. And I have to mention one or two role-playing games that I want to check out, too, separately.
But first,
yes.
the top five board games, card games we want to play. My top five. Number one is Machikoro.
You have to start with five and count down.
It's too late.
I'm going to start with five on mine.
All right. Number one is Machikoro.
I don't really care about the rest after this, by the way.
I'm very much looking forward to playing this game.
Yeah.
I've heard a lot of good, and Nick really seemed to enjoy it, and that is definitely top of my list. Number two is Castles of Mad King Ludwig.
Oh, I forgot about that.
Which is out of print right now.
Is it?
Yeah, it's out at both our distributors.
That sounded so fun when people have talked about it.
Yeah, and the basics of that one is that basically it's a you're trying to build a castle for a king who keeps changing his mind.
Right, and you're like sort of rival building contractors.
Yeah.
I think I read somewhere somebody saying that, you know, you can sort of build to sort of please the king or to just make cool and strange buildings and stuff like that. So there's and variations in between. So that sounded really fun.
Yeah, that sounds like a lot of fun. Number three is a game that has not come out yet, and it's the XCOM board game.
Yeah.
Which XCOM is a video game where you're a secret military unit dealing with an alien invasion.
Right, and that's also the greatest thing of all time.
It's also the greatest thing of all time.
The original game was amazing, and the remake was amazing.
The remake was amazing, and I need to play Enemy Within because I've heard the little basic expansion they added was really good.
I need to, too.
But that is really – the game they're doing, it's a Fantasy Flight game. It's going to be a turn-based tactical game. And
so it'll be like little squads and stuff moving around?
It's going to have iPad support. So like a little iPad or iPod or whatever tie-in like app that you use to help run the game.
Oh, okay. Very cool. You use it in conjunction.
In conjunction with it. Yeah.
That's very awesome.
Which I think is kind of neat. It seems like the kind of game that would work for, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I'm sure there'll be a timer or something.
Like, it'll crunch the numbers for
you
or whatever.
Yeah. So I'm looking forward to that. That's high on my list of anticipated games. Four is Betrayal of House of the Hill, which we've talked about.
Yep.
And five...
I'll basically play that at any moment's notice, so...
Do you have it?
I own it.
Oh, good. And number five is Seven Wonders, which is a game that I've not played. It's a game of sort of... I believe you're sort of trying to make the Seven Wonders of the World.
Yes.
And I've not played it. One of our customers, Allie Porter, has talked it up, ran it for us at Tabletop Day, which, by the way, we'll do Tabletop Day again this year. Probably think in April is when that happens. Uh-huh. We'll do a bunch of demo games. But I'm looking forward to play Seven Wonders. I've heard a lot of good, and it seems like a fun game. So that is my top five in order of 1 through 5, because that's how I roll.
I, too, will do a 1 through 5.
Mercy.
Then Dave's the rebel.
I will count down and leave people tingling with anticipation.
Restless.
Waiting for the first one. Will you guys blow your wad?
All right, moving on.
Yes.
Yes, my number one is a game called Patchwork.
Yes.
Which is a two-player game. I don't know the complete specifics on it, but
it's by Uwe Rosenberg,
which is,
however,
I think,
you say his name.
The guy who did Caverna.
And Agricola.
And Agricola.
Right. And Caverna, as I understand, is a sort of refined variant on Agricola's themes.
But this is kind of cool because it's specifically a two-player game, and I believe it deals with, like Patrick Quilts.
You are
and
right.
Stuff.
Rival Quilters.
The Rival Quilters.
Doesn't sound like it could possibly be fun, but it's probably supposed to be.
Well, you know, the game Wasabi is a game of rival sushi chefs, and although that might sound a little bit more fun just innately, there's no particular reason that these should be great games other than that they have
The best example is Carcassonne. When you say, okay, this is a game about building a 17th century French village.
Right.
That does not sound fun.
Right.
But in fact, it's one of the most fun games of all time.
Right.
The same can be said about Ticket to Ride.
Yeah.
You know.
Yes.
You know, it's
Have
just
you ever wanted to be a rail baron?
Come on, we all want to be rail barons.
I want to be a baron.
I don't know. Just the people who've talked about Patchwork has really made me excited to play it.
And it's a two-player game.
It is, and that's very cool.
That's something of a rarity.
Yeah.
The next game I want to play is Star Realms.
Oh, that's on my list a little further down, yeah.
I don't know a lot about it other than you're sort of a galactic empire building up, like, weaponry and then wanting to take other people.
And it's a deck-building game.
But it's a deck-building game. The reason I've kind of really come to want to play it is it sells out.
Every time we get it.
Every time
it's gone in, like, a week.
And I'm just like, this must be one of the best games that there is.
Yeah.
So it's a small game. It's, like, what, $15?
Yeah, it's a cheap game.
And I just have heard nothing but good things about it. You've put King of New York is on my list. I really want to play it. I love King of Tokyo, so... an older game that I would like to play that I know you both have played, Once Upon a Time.
I finally got to play that this year.
Yep. Yeah. The storytelling game.
Yeah,
sort of competitive storytelling.
Yeah.
Which just does sound like a lot of fun and, you know, very creative and all that other stuff.
We played that as a warm-up to Fiasco, and it actually worked pretty well thematically
with that.
Yeah, I
can see that. Yeah, it sort of takes a little bit of... You have to put yourself out there a little bit creatively for those games.
It warms up the storytelling muscles.
Yeah.
And my final game, number five, is a game called Letters from Whitechapel, which I really want to play. Mainly because it's about Jack the Ripper, and one person will play Jack the Ripper, and the other people play Investigators. And it's just sort of the board and the components and just sort of the look of the game.
I saw this played at some point, like a year or two back, and it was really cool looking. It seemed like Jack has to commit certain murders.
Yeah.
And the other players, they're all out prowling around for him, and... They would, like, you know, zero in on his location, or they'd, you know, and he would, like, sort of write down on a little secret pad where he is, or where his movements are, and they're trying to deduce it. It was really cool looking.
Yeah, it just looked like a fun idea and sort of an execution.
It's a bit macabre, I know there's also, like, I don't think it's in print these days, but there's a Dracula game, I think, called, like, Fury of Dracula or something.
Yeah.
That had a similar thing with investigators tracking him across, like, Transylvania or Europe in general, maybe. But I like the idea of these games.
Yeah,
I want to play one.
That is my list, Dave. Want to do yours?
Let's start with number five.
Oh, I see how it is. All right.
I'll show you how it's done. All right, number five is the game Spartacus.
Oh.
It's a bit of a surprise here, but I have some fondness from what I've seen for the... cheesy, exploitive, 300-esque, it was a...
Stars.
I couldn't remember the network. Show about the historical figure of Spartacus. It had sex and violence and all of that fun, and gladiators and good times.
Yep.
And...
That was the tagline.
The game, though, surprisingly for a licensed tie-in, especially with a show that's kind of a trashy show, it's supposed to be a really good game. where sort of part of the game is, I think you sort of represent the guys who own the gladiators, and you're sort of jockeying for political position with the emperor and for wealth and things like that. And then there's a game within the game of course, the actual gladiator battles.
Yeah.
So, but this is mainly one that's on my chart because it's just been so well received. It has a really high ranking on BoardGameGeek.
Yeah.
Number four is Love Letter, which Nick has talked about previously, yep. And I really want to try out.
It's on my list to try at some point, yep.
Number three is a game that my brother got recently, but I haven't had a chance to try, called Robinson Crusoe.
Okay.
Which we sell here, which is a cooperative game of sort of trying to escape from an island, Robinson Crusoe style.
It's survival elements. You think,
yeah, pandemic with as a survivalist thing,
yeah.
There's like a cook and a carpenter, and each one, of course, has their special powers.
Right.
There's dangerous wildlife on the island. There are storms and things like that. And like pandemic has the viruses that kind of get worse as time goes by. This might be I drew the card that a tiger is prowling the area,
yeah.
And that goes to the bottom of my hand or whatever, but it's going to show up soon as the actual tiger.
Yeah.
Can we get a gun or something beforehand? Can we set a trap?
Right.
It sounded like it's very cool, tense island survival.
Cool.
Stuff. Number two is Machi Koro, which Nick has discussed, and which I've been wanting to play since I first heard about it.
Yeah, yeah.
It also just looks visually neat. And my number one game was actually something I received for Christmas called Tragedy Looper.
Oh, okay.
It's the time travel game in which it's cooperative with one antagonist who runs the bad stuff. This is a Japanese game, so it has art that sort of looks like nice painted anime-type artwork. But essentially what it amounts to is the bad guy is trying to enact a sort of a murder or something like that.
Uh-huh.
And there's elements of... what's the Tom Cruise
Minority
movie?
Report?
Elements of Minority Report in it. So he's going to, like, increase paranoia, pit characters against each other on the board. The other players are trying to investigate and figure out what he's trying to do, what tragedy he's trying to commit, who's mm-hmm. going to die. And the idea is that they will inevitably lose initially. The bad guy will... Somebody will get killed.
Uh-huh.
When that happens, time loops back. They time travel and they have a chance to try and prevent it.
Oh,
and they're going to get to do this several times throughout the game where things are reset. So the canny bad guy may not initially kill off the person he really means to.
Oh, okay.
You're trying to throw them off by creating sort of like alternate potential tragedies. And they'll have more information about who he wants to manipulate. It's like, he seems really interested in this character. Let's go investigate him. So it's a sort of persistent time travel investigation. You can't keep time traveling backwards, but you will do it several times.
Huh.
It's apparently very unique mechanics, creates a sort of story each time,
mm-hmm.
And in fact does come with a finite number of stories, like 12 stories.
Okay.
But the instructions for apparently fairly easily building your own.
Okay.
So anyway, that is my number one that I'm interested to try out. It sounds weird and cool. And
yeah. Yeah. So I wanted to mention a couple games outside this that they didn't make my list because we can't get them.
Right.
At least one of them. I want to mention Dead Winter.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Because I've heard so much good about it. It's a zombie game, but it has been out of print since the second we got it. We got less than we ordered. We got one copy. That was all we were given. And it has not come back in print at all.
That's so very frustrating.
Whenever that comes back in print, I would really like to play it. I heard that's really good. And I've got a couple others. I want to play Splendor, which I hear was somebody's people's top game. Nick, you have some other stuff outside your top five, didn't you?
I just had one. I love Legendary so much that they did the Legendary Villains,
mm-hmm.
where you play villains, and I heard that it's a much different game than the other one. So I'm kind of curious to see how it approaches things and get my villainy on.
Cool. Dave, do you have anything slightly outside your list?
You know, there's some odds and ends, but I think the main one I want to mention is an old game, older game called Wasabi,
I think
from Z-Man Games.
Mm-hmm.
And I mainly mentioned it in the context of our ongoing sushi outing.
So you've never played Wasabi?
No, I have played it.
Oh, okay. You just
want to play
it again.
I just want to get it back on our map.
Yeah.
Because I think it'll be fun to, like, we go out, we grab some sushi, we come back, we play Wasabi.
Yeah. I've never played Wasabi.
Oh, I played Wasabi a couple weeks ago. Or about a week ago.
But I did want to mention one or two role-playing games that I want to play in the new year. The 13th Age is one of the big ones on my list.
Yeah.
I've read it. I loved it. I don't think I had more fun reading any RPG book this entire year than 13th Age. I just haven't been able to make time to play it. Let's see. There was also... Oh, right. End of the World Zombie Apocalypse. That's the one. I don't know if we actually talked about this for the podcast.
I don't think we did, actually.
But it's a new arrival. It's a nice hardcover from Fantasy Flight, and it's the first of their End of the World series. Mm-hmm. They're going to have... This is a zombie one, but there will be an alien invasion one. There'll be a sort of apocalyptic, like, rapture type thing. And so here's the interesting thing. Each one comes with... Well, I guess the biggest hook is you play you.
Yeah, yeah.
You literally play yourself. You sort of choose these stats from a... It's like a simplified role-playing system. This is not a super dense thing where you're going to be like, well, I'm pretty good at carpentry. You're going to pick a few kind of fun things about yourself. And there's just like a physical, mental, and social skills. You'll assign a number. The other players actually get to slightly adjust your numbers if they want.
Oh, okay.
But if it happens to adjust for the worse, then you get like sort of a bonus in something else. So you're going to have fun stuff to do no matter what. And and then you try out one of these scenarios. And it's actually meant to capture the fact that you do know something about the zombie apocalypse. Like, you're playing you. We know a little bit about zombies.
Yeah.
But they have five different scenarios. And it's everything from like sort of traditional slow-moving zombies to a variant on feral zombies to Haitian voodoo zombies and some like unexpected ones. So the players are not meant to know what they're getting into at first. And that's part of the fun. You poke around and you see what kind of strange new survivalist world are you in now. And they also have each scenario, no matter which one it is, say it's the feral zombies, they have one that they call the apocalyptic one. And the idea is you're right there on the cusp of it when it happens. This is, if you've seen World War Z, you know, the movie, you know, when he's out in the streets and zombies just start running up to cars and wrenching people out, that's the apocalyptic version, the figuring it out. The post-apocalyptic scenario, which would be like a separate one, is the one where it's like, it could be a few months or a few years down the line, and it's like, this is the strange new world that's arisen. There's survivor camps, there's roaming outlaws, there's, you know, all of that stuff. And essentially, they don't really have adventures in the book, but they have sort of a sandbox for each one. Sort of, well, here's some things your players might try and do. But it's well put together, and if you are a fan of apocalyptic, zombie-ish type stuff, I would highly recommend checking this book out. Yeah. So that's the one of the ones I most want to play. And then lastly, a game that's actually an older indie game that we're getting back in soon, I think. Were we able to get Dread?
Yes.
So Dread is a game, a horror RPG with the simplest of rules. It uses a Jenga tower.
Yep.
There's no dice. There's no character sheets. There's no stats. You ask people, you give them a sort of a 10-question questionnaire about themselves. So that they don't have to pull the Jenga blocks if they, if you're a cabbie and you need to do something risky driving about, you might not have to pull a block for that because you know how to drive. Well, actually, maybe you don't know if you're a cabbie. But the idea is that most RPGs, that it's hard to create the sort of tension of a horror story. And if you've ever run a horror game, you know that it's a little bit difficult. Players joke around. It can break the tension easily. So here, you have the continually trembling Jenga tower getting more and more likely to collapse, and when it collapses, the person who it collapsed in their pole, they die. You could probably change it up if you want, like to where something like initially something just bad happens to them, but I'm going to be running this in the next week or two. I'm very excited to do it, and I'm going for the death. I'm going to do a one night adventure. It's the perfect kind of thing for that sort of standalone horror movie type vibe. The players will be sort of regular people. They won't know what horror story they're getting into. It could be a vampire story. It could be a ghost story. It could be a zombie story. I'm really looking forward to it. I have sort of tested it out a little bit with some friends, just trying out some sample polls and all that. And I'm very excited to run it.
Cool. All right. Well, that about wraps it up for us this time. Let us know what was your top five games, what you're looking forward to. We will be back next week with comics, with any luck.
Yes.
And probably also talk some video games. Until next time,
Yo-Jo!
And that'll wrap it up for us this week. As always, you can drop us email with topic suggestions, things you want us to hear about, or just comments on the podcast at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter at Rogues Gallery. Check us out on Facebook. Check out our website at www.roguesgallerytx.com. And we'll see you in the store, and you can listen to us again next week.